very good Monday, race fans. Sirius 219, XM 201, Sports Zone 964. If you're listening to Sirius XM online and at our website, stevepick.com. Hope you had a terrific Thanksgiving. Don't know if everybody joined in on Friday when we came back live and kind of waltzed into the weekend. Tried to give some perspective to everything we were treated to, and it really, I mean, it was it was hot and heavy, and right from Friday afternoon leading up to the Clark, and well, I guess we're going to do some of this in chronological order. A little Friday, Saturday, Sunday. There's a lot to digest, and we'll absolutely start with the first grade one of the weekend when we're joined by Gustavo Delgado. And boy, that was, to me, and yes, I mean, I made Bode Express one of the three A's, and that was the best hit of the weekend. But there's a lot of satisfaction when you think about this horse and, you know, all the travail and you know, the notoriety for all the wrong reasons. It's great when a talented horse, you know, gets their chance and, you know, keeps getting chances until the good thing happens for him. And, you know, I was at Monmouth when he melted down and had to scratch. And I don't know. It's funny. I think it was the Haskell situation that really got me to have particular affection for him. And you know, then that big performance that led into this, it really, you know, showed. And you know, granted, we kept saying, well, they're not running the Clark at Calder. They're not going to be running anything at Calder. We'll get to that today. The effort on Friday, and, you know, for everybody involved, from Gustavo Delgado to the horse to Rafi Bejarano. How about Rafi Bejarano's part in all this? That's Deja in the background. Deja, you got that mic open. You're making me laugh. We were talking. We right before we threw the switch. That was great. We do love Rafi Bejarano, and you could tell he was tickled to get that kind of a win, a grade one, back at Churchill. You know, where really he started his career launch. And we're going to talk to Gustavo Delgado and get a feel for, you know, what this means to him and to Bode Express. To me, it kind of gave the weekend a really fun kickoff, you know, the serious racing. But I mean, everywhere we looked, of course, the Friday Aqueduct and Beyond Churchill out of Del Mar, I mean, all three of the, you know, the major ovals were producing, and we'll get into so much of it. There was multiple winners when it comes to sets of connections, led most notably by Chad Brown out west, and we sensed on Friday. In fact, it came up with Jay Primman, that, you know, everything was in place for Chad Brown and his clients to have a big weekend, and it came off, you know, starting with Orglandes in that red carpet on Thanksgiving, and then, you know, right through Saturday and into last night, and whether it was the Viadera thrilling matriarch and a thrilling Hollywood Derby. I mean, both of the great ones were outstanding. Fluffy Sox, too, wins the Jimmy Durante, not without controversy with Errat Ortiz, who was handed down, you know, some days on the ground. We'll get to that. It's funny, on Friday I said, you know, during the week, there have been, you know, no shortage of jockey hijinks, jockeying, and it continued through the weekend. There were plenty of places where the, you know, the decision was thrown upstairs, and you know, the stewards had opinions to render. Let's just put it that way, and I'm sure we'll touch on it. In addition to the performers that Chad sent out, how about Brad Cox? Brad Cox with Arklow, who, you know, really is, has, you know, late in the year, kind of resurrected himself. Then you had the Philly. Arklow wins that Hollywood Turf Cup on Friday, and Travel Column. It wasn't just Travel Column that, you know, that changed the, you know, the dialogue on Saturday in the Goldenrod, because I think we made it very clear that Simply Ravishing, I did not particularly lean toward Travel Column at all. I thought that, you know, there were other potential, you know, jump up candidates, including Cox's other Philly coach, and Farsighted, and that Clarriere. And Clarriere, obviously, is going to be a player going forward. That was only her second start. But Travel Column, Florent Giroux, and you know, it's funny, both of the 2-year-old stakes on Saturday were won in very similar fashion. We're going to talk to Robertino Diodoro. Keep Me in Mind rallied from the back of the pack, and Travel Column, in fact, Travel Column, I think, too, was actually shuffled early, right? And wasn't, you know, right at the tail end of the field, but certainly came from off the pace. So both of the winners of the 2-year-old stakes, the two grade twos. It was not a day at Churchill on Saturday where you had, you know, real glaring, you know, figures and so forth, but both of these horses, particularly, you know, the fillies were faster than the boys, but it really felt coming out of this like Travel Column and Clarriere are, you know, major fillies heading toward the January 1st birth dates. Keep Me in Mind is funny, and we'll talk to Diodoro this hour about what kind of a horse he is, because he clearly, you know, given the figure, what the figure came back, I know I've got the figures, yeah, 79, which, you know, when you compare it to his 92 in the juvenile, and you know, in essence, he feels like a horse that, you know, is going to run with, you know, whatever's going on around him. In fact, I read Jay last night, I retweeted Jay Pribman's Jockey Club recap, and Jay, you know, called it a case of a horse that, you know, runs to the level of competition. But he's also a horse, interesting, you know, look at this pedigree, Leyvan out of the Victory Gallop mare, and it just looks like he is going to completely, it'll be a route-going type that is going to be very comfortable when these distances click off, you know, from a mile and a 16th to a mile and an eighth and beyond. And, you know, by the way, speaking of Victory Gallop, the travel column was out of a Victory Gallop mare as well. Bain Welker and Denali bred the Frosted Filly travel column, and Southern Equine, of course, with one of their Leoban seasons, and the mare Inclination. So I'm looking forward, actually, we'll talk to Sid and get some insights from Sid on that front. Very interesting. And of course, Victory Gallop, you know, you're getting plenty of stamina there. So that pretty notable, actually, and you know, big wins for Frosted Daughter and the Leoban son. So Gustavo Delgado and Robertino Diodoro in this hour. To give you a quick rundown of some other visits and some of the other topics from the weekend. I mentioned the situation that brought the curtain down at Calder. And it really did feel like the majority of people, you know, talking about the final days of racing at Miami Gardens. Pretty much everybody reverted to calling it properly Calder Racecourse. And I didn't tweet anything, but I got my appreciation to make about it, because when, you know, I first started, you know, chance to go, and I'd gone a couple of times, I think, in the 90s, but I really started to go regularly when, you know, when I was going down to South Florida on a regular basis to visit my mother and you know, spend parts of the winters, you know, never longer than really, I guess, a month, or I guess a couple of times, maybe. Yeah, about a month here and there. But mostly, you know, a week, 10 days in spots. And I got to at least, appreciate Calder while it was still operating in complete fashion. That included the Fasig 2-year-old in training sale experience. I wasn't there for Green Monkey, but John Parada was, and John called. I had left. I was there for the sale and had to go back to the studio on 17th Street Causeway, the old studio, for the 4 o'clock start. And JJ and I and Sam, and you're getting ready for the 4 o'clock start, and John Parada stayed at the sale, and John called in and said, "You're not going to believe what just happened." And that was the Green Monkey. But, you know, Calder was just, an entity unto itself. It wasn't Hialeah. It wasn't Gulfstream. It was different. And, you know, the dining room up on the top floor of the building, it was just a really pleasant and convivial spot, and it had a really nice clubby atmosphere when you'd go to Calder. Beautiful, you know, the paddock and you know, that walking ring, and it was really a pleasant place. And Mike Welch is going to join us in hour three, and I'm sure we'll also reach out. There's a couple different people that I want to include and get some, you know, some reaction, but it'll be missed because I don't get the idea that you 12 months a year at one facility is just doesn't really, I mean, it's been proven and discussed plenty that it's just too much. So, I don't know. People are bandying about, you know, is it possible to, you know, that Hialeah could be coerced into, you know, to running some dates? Hopefully. I mean, ideally, it'd be great. We've been discussing it as long as I've been doing this, 15 years. I mean, there'd have to be you know, a lot. There's no barns. It would have to be a ship in, and there'd be plenty of, you know, investment just to get things into position to run. And the public, certainly horse players and fans, would relish an opportunity to go to Hialeah and take in some racing there. But, and I, you know, Mike, I'll let Mike address it, but, you know, I, you know, people have been talking about it, you know, wistfully for ages. In addition, by the way, to Calder, I didn't get as much notoriety, but the curtain also came down on Scarborough Downs in Maine. And I'm sure when we talked to Seth this week, to Seth Merrow, I reached out to Mike Sweeney and last week, and we'll try to get Mike at some point too this week. But there were plenty of people that were just as saddened, you know, to see the end of racing at Scarborough. Probably not as many as at Calder, just because Calder was a bigger venue. But, you know, and you had things like, you know, Summit of Speed and you know, major horses. I'm sure Scarborough Downs had its share of major horses over the years. But Calder has, you know, will have a lasting place in the game's history. There's no arguing that. Rich Migliori is going to join us. Yeah, that comes at the top of the hour, and we'll talk about you know, the end of the broadcast season. Really, I know that they're going to have a Cigar Mile Day show next week at the end, you know, this weekend. But the long run of the America's Day at the Races and the, you know, Saratoga Live and you know, the amazing productions that have, you know, really been remarkable, frankly, the effort that's gone into, you know, bringing Saturday racing broadcasts to, you know, to throughout the week, the on-site productions. I mean, not that, you know, obviously TVG does, you know, studio work, and they've got plenty of people on site, you know, at you know, various meets, but, you know, what NYRA has been able to accomplish with the show is really something. So we'll talk to Rich about that, and also about a lot of the racing, and the speaking of the racing, Christophe Clément, and we'll probably catch up with Chris tomorrow or Wednesday. He can't join us today, but Clément, with some, you know, outstanding performances, and that Muta Makina in the Long Island. How about that? I mean, that Dylan Davis, you know, looked, there were a couple of performances and moments where horses, you know, got into, you know, little bits of hot water and looked, you know, looked in trouble and rallied. And Muta Makina, once clear, came flying up the inside in that Long Island to get up. That was a nice effort. And also you had City Man. And speaking of which, very, very helpful insights from Nick on particularly on Fridays. Was it Fridays or Saturdays? I'm going to lose track. You know, City Man, he was on, and that was, you know, the first leg of one of the cross countries. We'll go over those the next day or so. And also Feel Glorious, who won the Forever Together. Nice weekend for Junior Alvarado. Alvarado has got another few days before he heads to Florida. But, you know, he was on City Man. He was on Feel Glorious. He was on Forza de Oro. How about Bill Mott? That's an emergent-looking type. There were a lot of new stars establishing themselves over the weekend. That's part of the storyline, right? That Forza d'Oro, That was nice in the Discovery. That's a nice, that's a, you know, that's a forward goer. And of course, Chad, I mean, domestic spending and that Villadera, or Glandes, I mean, some of the ones that are, you know, have come over as imports, but there were a bunch of horses that, established themselves with efforts over the weekend. Mrs. Danvers. How about Mrs. Danvers in the Comley? I'm glad we had, Sugar had a good weekend. We talked to him and went over. There were some other, there was one or two other, there was either a maiden or an allowance winner too that I'm not thinking of for Shug. No shortage of interesting and exciting winners from the weekend. Lots to do. We're also going to tell the story involving the late Paul Pompa, because on Saturday, two wins for Paul. Jerry McClendon is going to join us in hour two, and it was really moving. They won the stake with Turn to Side, the turf sprint, and there was also for Todd as well. Todd had allowance winner earlier on the card, so the whole family was on hand. It was, you know, it was emotional, say the least. It was an emotional Friday for Gustavo Delgado and the team involved with Bodie Express. Gustavo joins us now, and the horse that has captured the hearts and minds of lots of fans and players. Gustavo, congratulations.
Thank you. Thank you, Steve. Thank you, too, for having me as well.
I was so excited for you, and you know, this horse, you guys have, the whole team has expressed repeatedly that there's talent there. It's challenging to work with a horse like this. You know, talk about everything that you're feeling to have him become a Grade One winner like this.
Gratifying, absolutely. That's the first word that comes to mind. Apart from that, feeling the excitement about all the people that is involved with the horse, because I'm really happy about not only the owners and his groom Moises, who is, you know, a very good horseman. My dad, his exercise rider. But I'm, like I said when they first interviewed me right after the race, I'm the most happy is the thing is about the horse, because I mean he deserves it, and you know, all the people, the fans, because this horse, you won't believe it, man. This horse got so many fans. They always reach out to me through the Twitter or the social media, and they will always ask me, "How's the horse? How's the horse?" I mean, and so people rooting for him. So it's a really amazing feeling.
People obviously they think about what happened in the Preakness, but there's been others. I was there at Monmouth this summer when he melted down and it had to be scratched. And there's obviously been moments where you don't know what to think or what to say about a horse like this that has talent. Explain the work that has gone into him behind the scenes.
Well, it's, you know, the horse we see in the morning, it's a totally different horse that you see on the races. He's the most quiet, cool guy in the morning. Easy to go with. He doesn't need a pony. We do it, but he doesn't need it. And he's just the sweetest guy in the stall. He just, you know, like many of us sometimes just get anxious, nervous, and sees people. And we horsemen do some things like, you know, you plug your plug his ears, you do a lot of schooling, you do and one of those things is you get them nourished, you gelding them. That's one option that we always had in order to, you know, keep him a little quiet in the afternoon. But we always try to avoid that option and just, you know, being patient with him, knowing that with time and a lot of work, because sometimes you also have to pay attention to keeping him sound, happy. So we always knew with time, more races, he would settle down, and eventually, I would say, last probably 2-3 races, he's come along, I would say.
The performance, and I've got to fold in the fact that you're based at Calder. And he's a horse that, when you look at his record, he's been so good at Calder. And when he came back and ran that allowance win, got the 102 buyer, which is a career best, you know, to me it said, you know, if he runs back to this in the Clark, he's a major player. And that's the way it kind of came about. Talk a little bit, two things, about, you know, specifically this race, and then we'll come back and we'll talk about, you know, your time in Florida and with the, you know, the curtain coming down on Calder. I do want to get some thoughts. But, you know, Rafi Bejarano involved here. Talk about Saturday's performance.
Fridays.
Well, definitely.
We tried to get him after his last race here in Calder. We tried to get him to the Breeders' Cup mile, and he was first on the AE list. So we decided, like, if we're not in the race, we're not shipping him over. So then we looked it up, and then we found that there were two options. We had the Clark and then the Cigar Mile next, which is, I believe, this week.
Yeah.
So, because apart from, you know, him being so good up here, because Gulfstream Park West, Calder, it's home for him, and that's the main reason why he performed so well, because it's the same track he was training every day, and you know, we all, the whole thing not having spectators, it helped him a little bit, as I was saying, right after the race, we were looking options. The last race here in Calder, we were looking options where we're going to race him next. And then, because he ran in the in an allowance race, Derby Day at Churchill, and he did pretty good, but we knew he wasn't that fit enough. So he was lacking some fitness. He wasn't, like, on point, and we did a double enter that weekend, because he was entered also for the Ali Shiva the day before on Friday, and those same horses were there. By my standards, I think that's the horse who won. Mackenzie, who was the favorite in the race, Owendale, Mr. Freeze, all the same horses that were in that race on Friday. So he had a nice course allowance on Derby Day, and we decided to go to the allowance because, you know, we knew that he was maybe missing a little bit fitness. He was, like, I would say 75-80%, and somehow we let Javier choose whatever he felt we had more chance. And Javier told us, let's win the round. Let's give him the confidence. And if he does good, you know, then we try something bigger next time. So he put up a nice race. He that horse, Asmussen horse, Aurelius Maximo, I believe is his name.
Yep.
That was the horse who beat him that day. I remember asking Mr. Asmussen after the race. I was like, Steve, why you make that horse? Is he that good? And he said, oh, he's really good. I'm thinking a big thing for him for the next race. And we were like, well, we got beat by a nice horse. But we knew as well that Bodie wasn't, you know, at his peak. Then we shipped him back home. He put the performance in allowance. It was hard to feel the race. And then we knew we had the horse ready. So we nominated him for the car. We nominated him for the cigar. Obviously, we always knew that he can go a mile and a mile and a quarter as well. But you have doubts, like maybe we need to short him a little bit, just try to go one turn, a mile. But then we look at the fields and then the horses that were planning to run, and I said to my dad and the other owners, I would say the Clark, because he already knows the track. He's been running well there. He's used to the ambience at Churchill, so that's where we should take the shot. And definitely pay off. Then we deciding what rider to pick. You know, you have all those, I would say, marriages at Churchill, Santana, as we said, the Frenchies, they're going to go with Cox. And so we were like,
Frenchies.
We were like, yeah. And then we have Bejarano, who. Rafael, this is the first mount ever Bejarano rides for us. So it was, but you know, he did his homework, because when I talked to him before the race, I just asked him, what do you think? Will you make of the race? And he already watched all his races, and he told me two key things. He told me he doesn't necessarily be on the lead. If they're going to go with outside horse, I can't recall the name, and if they're going to go with outside horse, I just want to, I'm just going to hold him and try to stay clear out of him, because he doesn't like to be with pressure right next to him, but he doesn't necessarily be on the lead. So he pay off. I mean, he had some he had faith on the horse, and he tried hard, and I will put I will give Rafael a very nice share on the on the win.
You know, he set up beautifully behind you know, the 150-1 shot, that Phantom Currency, and you know, was just very comfortable, and he had rated, you know, he'd was, you know, rating nicely. I mean, that hasn't been an issue. And when he took over, I mean, he was moving very steadily, and got past, you know, Mr. Freeze. Mr. Freeze had taken over, and you could see mid stretch that you know, even with Code of Honor coming and everybody that was trying to rally, once he took the lead, Gustavo, you could just see that he was still moving better than anybody, and he powers through the wire.
Yeah, he got another gear this time, and that's the thing. I mean, the key was, you know, also not wasting so much energy before, because he relaxed. Yeah. I mean, I was looking at him before the race, the pre-race, with the binoculars. I was looking at him, and he, same pony was riding, was going with him in the morning. Same pony was going with him in the afternoon. I was key as well. The Omar, the guy who helped us there, the exercise rider, because we didn't bring his normal, regular exercise rider from Florida. So we had Omar there, and he ponied himself in the afternoon and for the race. And you know, all those familiar things for him in the afternoon, I think play a good role in the perform in the race.
Well, a grade one winner now. Obviously, given the pedigree and the resume and there's still plenty yet to come from him. I imagine you come back for Pegasus, right? You got Pegasus, which he ran in last year. That's the short term goal.
I would say he's right now in Ocala. The owner, one of the owners, owns a farm there, Global, and he went there for short rest. And we're supposed to get him, I would say later this week, probably by Thursday or Friday. And I'm going to take it from there, play by ear. But yes, definitely Pegasus, it's the race that makes sense. Right now, he already used to Gulfstream as well. He had a couple nice performances there. I would say the one this year wasn't that bad though. At some point he was in the lead. He had mucho gusto around. That was by far the best horse in the race that day, and. But yeah, I will say Pegasus seems to be the best option for us because he's going to be here in Florida. He's already used to. He ran the second in the Florida Derby last year.
Yep.
Same mile and an eighth behind Maximum Security. So he's got to put on nice races, but. Hopefully, the momentum he has. I don't know. There's going to be tough horses there, for sure. It's a bigger horse. But, yeah, we definitely want to try. And Papa likes to try, trust me. we put him in the Derby, being a maiden. So, that was also, Papa likes to try. He likes to run his horses and the owners as well. I think definitely the Pegasus, if everything comes well, if everything keeps going well, we're gonna try to run the Pegasus.
Well, after all the group ones in Venezuela, this is actually the second grade one in North America, because I remember Paola Queen, she won the test going back a few summers at Saratoga.
Yeah, 50-1. Yeah, 50-1. Something like that. 55-1. Yeah, I was crazy too. Yeah.
Well, this was almost 12-1. This was very good. I mean, we talked on Friday. When we handicapped and the way I wrote the race up. To me, it seemed like there were three horses that could win this: Mr. Freeze, and him, and Code of Honor. Those were, to me, the three that that made the most sense. And being inside, getting a ground saving trip was going to count for something. Bodie Express comes through and breaks through. A terrific win. Gustavo, got to also ask about a couple of others. We talked about Caro Caro at Saratoga this summer, and give everybody an update on Caro Caro.
No, he's retired now. We found out that the But we think it wasn't that major right after that last race before the Derby. He ended up being, I would say, if, you know, we just see same injury in different horses, that you can take the risk and just try to bring them back. And if it doesn't go well, just, you know, c'est la vie and you retire them. But considering him as a good horse that, like, we know he is or he was, we just don't want to take the risk to try and bring him back. And we have, the owners have this option on taking him to Crestwood.
Nice.
They did a nice deal. Also, all these Uncle Mo sires, you know, the you have Nyquist, Lauban. They really are, like, running now. And yeah, I mean, that was the right thing to do. But he was a really nice horse. He is a really nice horse. And unfortunately, we couldn't, put together a grade one on him because it would make him look better for the breeding part. But anyhow, he ran four times. He had a win in 3 seconds. And one of those seconds was behind Tizzle on the Traverse.
Yep.
The second day he had behind a pole horse, I can't recall, in the Peter Pan. I think it was. I can't recall the name of the horse, but I know pole pumper on him. So that was a race that probably he deserved to win because he covered so much ground. He went wide, and the other horse went through the reel and but I mean he put some nice performances but it was a very short career but very talented horse. I would say. Papa and his opinion, not mine, but Papa would like him way more than the other ones that we have, and because he always, we always think that he was doing things so easy in the morning that none of all the horses have done training in the morning. I mean that was he was, you know, pretty special. And I believe that he's gonna make nice babies, definitely.
Well, he's got the Uncle Mo going for him, and it seems like, you know, one after another, the Uncle Mo's are producing, including. You know, we're going to talk later, in fact, next to Robertino Diodoro, who's got the Leaban colt that won the Keep Me in Mind. So I want to ask you about one maiden winner because the it's kind of nice that your last starter ever at Calder, Ocean Ride, wins. And nice candy ride. Looks like there's some upside to this colt.
Yes. He's in the same partnership as the other two horses. Somehow we've been in a nice ride with them. They're sending us their best horses, and they are very little. I mean, they don't have that many, but they do things right, and they like to keep up with the nice pedigrees and try to find the nice babies at the sales, not spending that much. This one is a candy ride that they breed. They own the mare, Miss Patricia, who is by Indian Charlie, candy ride by out of Indian Charlie mom. And he's not that big. He's typically a candy ride, not that big, but classy horse. And actually, we were quite impressed because we just wanted to give him the race. But we never thought that, you know, he could like, we knew he was going to play well. He was going to race well, but we never expected him to win. Like, he was ready 90, 100%. So we were just trying to give him the race, but it turned out that, you know, sometimes when they good, just they go out there and do their thing, and he didn't break well. He was a little rank, and so he kept going.
Nice. Nice. And while we're on the topic, there was another last week or give or take 10 days ago, Girafales.
By social inclusion.
Yeah.
That was the horse that Joe Applebaum and Carlos Morales sent to us. Because you see him, Girafales is a character it's not a cartoon, it's a TV show in Mexico, but the name is a professor, and the guy is too tall, and this horse looks like a dinosaur. So that's the reason of the name. And you know, all the people who work for us, they're Mexicans, and always, you know, we put names here in the barn for the babies, and always keep telling me, so they name the horse. They practically name the horse in the barn, and then when Joe and Carlos asked me, I think about a name, and I was, well, I don't know, but here the Girafales. You know the TV show, and they start laughing. It might be a good name, so. They tried one, and I think the other one got rejected by the jockey club, and then they put that name. And yeah, he's really nice. He's definitely going to go two turns, probably third later on. But that one, too, well, got a lot of room for develop. He's still, you know, learning and getting fit. But yeah, we have a couple more that they're not ready yet. They probably will make his first start, their first time in championship meet that starts now, and hopefully, you know, keep them on track with the nice races, because that's pretty much what Papa likes. That was the reason he came here to the States. I'm a dreamer too. The Derby, always trying to go to those kind of races, and you know, we don't have that many babies coming every year, but somehow we manage to be in the scene. So we take pride in that, knowing that, you know, it's a tough game, and we're very humble about it, but we gotta keep trying.
And absolutely, and you kept trying with the Bodie Express, and the perseverance and the patience and the good handling, it pays off on Friday in the Clark, the Grade One win, and Bodie Express, who became a celebrity when he ran free in the Preakness, he won a lot of hearts and fans, and now he's got a big Grade One to go along with it. We'll look forward to the Gulfstream season starting Wednesday. I see you guys have got a few in already, and Gustavo, I appreciate it. Congratulations to Pop and to everybody involved, the people at Top Racing. This one really had to feel good, and I was delighted for you.
Thank you, Steve. Thank you. I appreciate it.
Not at all. Gustavo Delgado Jr. and the team behind Bodie Express, and a couple of others that keep track of Ocean Ride and Girafales. That's great. The Professor Girafales. for that's I love it. The good one. Couple of good 2 year olds coming yet, and Cairo Caro entering stud. We're going to stay right here, and we'll talk to Robertino Diodoro. Speaking of 2 year olds, and speaking of Uncle Mo stallions, Leoban, who really jumped on the scene. I've kidded repeatedly with Leoban emerging. I've kidded that the one and only genius had said that Leoban was going to be a terrific stallion, and like these other sons of Uncle Mo, has really really done well and is going to move to Kentucky, and the career keeps going forward, and the latest stake winner. And obviously we knew, Keep Me in Mind, coming out of the Breeders' Cup Juvenile. I mean, it was establishing himself, but the performance on Saturday in the Kentucky Jockey Club, just super professional, and obviously gives an indication that, as the distances go from a mile and a 16th to a mile and an eighth and beyond, that he's going to relish it. I'm really pleased to get Robertino Diodoro in to take some bows. Tino, congratulations.
No, I appreciate it. Thank you very much.
This is one of those, fun stories. And, you come out of the Breeders' Cup where obviously he performed brilliantly, and you do want to get that that win and that that maiden win out of the way. You hate to keep running a good horse like this and not getting that that victory. Talk a little bit about the Breeders' Cup and then getting ready for this race Saturday.
No, you're definitely right, and I know behind the scenes or whatever that we took some criticism for that. First of all, running him in the Breeders' Cup, and then again on Saturday in the Jockey Club. But I really thought after the Breeders' Cup performance and the way he bounced back out of it, he definitely deserved a shot on Saturday. But at the same time, it kind of felt a little bit of pressure on us because, again, the critics were out there saying, what the heck are these guys doing running this horse in here and not in the maiden special weight? But, like I said, really after the Breeders' Cup, this horse deserved it. And I didn't want to run him back this quick. The way he bounced out of the Breeders' Cup was unbelievable. And the way he trained, I think he trained even better going into this race and over the Churchill surface as well. So that kind of all led to making our decision to run him Saturday.
And you mentioned the Churchill surface, and you moved him to Keeneland preparing for the Breeders' Cup, and you got a couple of works in over the track, and that included a 58-1 that was absolutely a giant signal that he was going to run well in the Breeders' Cup, and yet he still goes off at 31-1.
Yeah, no, we were really excited about him going into the Breeders' Cup, and I know a couple of people, I don't say this very often, but I did tell a couple of people who were going to win the Breeders' Cup because I really believed we were the way he was training into it, and got in a little trouble around the turn, but I thought he ran really well in the Breeders' Cup, and I think he took one step forward again on this past Saturday.
And it's funny because it obviously getting a win is the step forward, but at the same time, you got to recognize that from a figure standpoint, and you're a guy that is very aware of figures. You're you're a prominent claiming outfit, so you're watching horses' patterns. It's kind of unusual that this is a horse that seems to run to the level of his competition.
Yeah, and he's even like that a little bit in the morning when he works. I mean, he just doesn't drag you around there in 59 or whatever. I mean, you work him with a slower horse, he works slower. You work him with a faster horse, a better horse, he works better. And I think that, just like what you said, Steve, I think it carries over into the afternoon with the way his personality is.
You know, Davey Cohen has been on board for three of his performances. Jose Ortiz rode him in the Breeders' Cup, and he's pretty much, you know, whatever distance. Actually, he's gone. Yeah, I guess the debut. Yeah, the debut was one turn, and then since then, two turn races, and he gives every indication of being a horse that, you know, is absolutely going to just keep, you know, plugging along as the distances stretch out. But he does have it, it's not like he doesn't have speed. I mean, talk about his development and, you know, what challenges it provided in terms of, you know, getting him across and getting him a W.
Yeah, well, I think one was, you know, he still is just a big baby. I mean, he's got quite the personality back at the barn and even in the mornings and stuff. But I think the blinkers the last two times have helped him a little bit develop and move forward, just being more focused down the lane. And when it's time to lay it down, you know, like he did Saturday, you know, he knows to lay it down. And I just think, you know, just maturing, and it's just going to, I really believe that he's going to get better and better, because he's still, he still hasn't fully matured at all.
I mentioned Guillo, and this is a colt that was bred by Guillo and Mike Moreno, Southern Equine. Talk a little bit about the backstory with him, and you know, how he came to you.
Yeah, no, Mike Moreno and I, Mike called me, and we had a few different discussions, and the next thing you know, there was four or five two-year-olds coming to me in Hot Springs here out at the training center that we use here. And that was roughly back in January, February of last year. And they came from Paul Sharp's place. And, you know, after a couple of days of training, you know, you could tell they were all big, good-looking horses. And just kind of went from there.
How nice. How many lay-abands do you have?
Three right now. Yeah. And I honestly can't say, or we can't say enough about them. I think it's one that's, I mean, he's really stamped his babies. I mean, they're, I know I've said this before in a couple interviews, that talking to even a couple friends of mine that have lay-abands, without even really saying much to them about them, they give me the same description. They're just, they go out there, they mean business, they're very good-minded horses, and when they train, they put, you know, it makes it easier getting these horses ready for longer races, like Keep Me in Mind, because when he goes out to train, he's all business. I mean, there's no hobby horsing around, and he just bows his neck, and, I mean, he's business. So it's good-minded horses. I think that's the biggest thing, that he's really stamped the babies that I've seen. So I think I always say horses are like athletes. I don't care how much talent they got, you got to have good minds on them, or it's going to catch up to them eventually.
Well, you could really tell how pleased you were on Saturday to get him across, and a little bit about the, you know, the other connections. I want to ask, it just popped in my head, with you using Davey Cohen as much as you do, I understand Billy Castle has been sick. Is what do we know about how Billy's doing?
I don't know. He's recovered now. He's back home in Manhattan, and of course I talk to him daily. But no, he's feeling much better, and I think he's bouncing back to himself.
Good, because we had heard that, you know, Billy had had a COVID bout, and so that's good news. And I'll send him a text. I'm glad to hear that. Tell me about on the ownership side too, Cypress Creek, and I've seen Mr. Benowitz's name as well, Arnie Benowitz.
Okay, well, with Cypress Creek, that's a friend of Mike Marino's from back quite a few years, and I've just got to know him. Kevin and Arnie Bethwick, it's kind of a long story, but I started training for him a few years ago with one horse at Turf Paradise. And how I trained for him, or how I started training for him and met him, is his son, Lance, was my old hockey coach when I was roughly 10 years old back in Canada. Yeah.
That's great.
Yeah, and no, just ran into his son one day at Turf Paradise roughly 3-4 years ago and said, "You remember me?" And I'm kind of looking at him, and it kind of went from there. Next thing you know, he said, "You know, my dad has a horse up at Hastings Park," and this and that. And next thing you know, here came one horse, and we've bought and claimed a couple others now, and then got into these two layabands. So he's having fun. Arnie and his wife Judy, they were at the Breeders' Cup. They couldn't make it Saturday to Churchill, but I think they're having a blast, to be honest.
That's tremendous. I love it. Well, keep me in mind, and the breakthrough win. Great to get, you know, a win over the surface. Not that he didn't run well even in his debut. And speaking of his debut, Tino, what was your inclination? Because that race came off the turf, and how, you know, how focused were you in starting him out as a turf horse?
No, to be honest, we wanted to run him on the dirt. It was just the way it kind of lined up, and yep. It actually just fell. We got very lucky. It come off the turf, like you said, and it kind of worked out perfect. We really didn't want to run him on the turf. So
I get it. All right, I mean, was that a case of watching the weather and anticipating it might come off?
Yes, it was, and it just kind of made a guy look smart for once. I mean, this game can be, you can look like a genius one day and a dodo head the next day. So,
well,
it worked out pretty good.
It shouldn't be lost either that Arabian Prince was third in here, and it was Arabian Prince who beat him that day in the off-the-turf maiden race, came back and ran okay in the street sense for Dallas Stewart and West Point, and then, you know, runs a very solid third in here. So that race ends up being a pretty productive group, and in fact, that Laker Mamba, that's Gary Barber's horse, was third and came back with a maiden breaker after that.
Yeah, no. You know, and if you watch his replay of his first start, I mean, he got into lots of trouble, and you know, every race except for Saturday, I mean, he's had some trouble. I mean, you go back at the Breeders' Cup, and he got the shuffle into the far turn. Well, he got shuffled to the back, leaving the gate, about 10 jumps out of the gate, and then got the shuffle around the turn, and until Saturday, he hasn't had a real super clean trip, to be honest. So like I said, even that first his first maiden start, he got in some traffic trouble down on the inside. So, you know.
Well, you got some real exciting months ahead with him. Let's speculate. I suppose, you know, you mentioned, you know, being getting ready for Arkansas and the action at Oaklawn. That's obviously, you know, option A for him.
Yeah, you know, the first step. Well, we took him down to Windstar yesterday. We'll give him roughly 3 weeks there, and then we'll get him to Oaklawn, and you know, we'll take one step at a time, one day at a time, and we'll start him back training here after a short break, and start making a few plans. You know, there's some options out there that we've talked about a little bit. I mean, there's always there's Fairgrounds, there's Gulfstream, so we're going to try to, once we're just going to sit tight here for the next few weeks, and then start mapping out a little, you know, hopefully a little plan that's going to get him to the first weekend in May.
You know, one challenge, of course, when you get to this point and you win, you know, end of November, beginning of December, mile and a 16th, and you know, this horse started out with the debut at a mile, you probably don't, you know, you don't want to go backwards, although I guess you could run in you know, something like the Southwest is you know, 1 mile, right, around two turns. But what's your thought on that aspect?
Yeah, no, I think you got a good point there, Steve. I don't think we do want to go backwards with them. I wouldn't want to shorten them up if we could help it. I think that's important to keep them moving forward and stretching them out instead of of going backwards. Actually, you know what, Steve? The Southwest is a mile of 16th because I just grabbed the Oakland condition book when you said that because you got a little nervous when you said that.
So, okay. Well, it's maybe it's the Smarty Jones. Maybe the Smarty Jones is a mile.
Yeah, correct. On opening day at Oakland is a flat mile, and then they come back February 15th with the Southwest mile of 16th. So, wow. Like I said, we'll take it one day at a time, and we've got to keep them. Our main thing right now is to keep them healthy and happy. I keep saying that, and I'm going to say it every day until hopefully we get back to Churchill.
I love it. Well, this is a nice. Obviously, this is a nice horse. He's racking up some points. He got Derby points when it came to the Juvenile, and now he adds another 10 with this performance, and start to look ahead to the 3-year-old year. A horse that. Absolutely, no is going to be competitive as the distances stretch out. Got to ask you about a couple of others. Robertino Diodoro with us, personal favorite of mine. Pioneer Spirit ran a good third in the Delta Mile Saturday.
Yeah, he did. He got hung out a little bit. At the same time, I don't usually, on a bull ring, you want to stay on the rail as much as you can, and with so much rain. It usually doesn't happen at Delta, but the rail got really deep, and just watching a few races over the first few days, there a lot of riders were trying to stay off the rail because of that, and I think that really cost us at least second. Like I said, Ry Eckleberry thought and was doing the right thing, keeping him to the outside, but it's pretty tough to do that on a bull ring. At the same time, the winner, Hunkin' Burnin' Love, is just turned into a complete monster for Carl Broberg. He's run some very impressive races this winter, this past summer. And
yep.
Unfortunately, I had to be in most of them.
Exactly.
I was bet Carl that he's got to start paying me for filling some of these races, because if you look back at Lone Star and Remington, I always had one or two in the race. And again, I feel like I was starting to be a race filler for that horse.
Well, that's his seventh win. And we're going to reach out to Broberg, who's never been on, and who, I mean, you know him. I said this the other day. We had when we were previewing the Delta season, and he just, based on his persona on Twitter anyway, seems like some character.
Oh, yeah, he is. No, he loves the game, but he's a character, that's for sure.
Well, he's also tearing it up at Delta. I mean, he's had the most amazing start that any outfit could possibly have. And I'm just looking at Hunkin' Burnin' Love. You're right. You did run into him over and over again this year in those 12 races, including at Will Rogers Downs.
He's turned into a monster, that horse, and just the way that I mean winning seven is, of course, that's impressive, but you go back and watch that horse's replays, I mean he just jerks the air right out of everyone. I don't know how many times we've had two in a race, and our instructions was the one horse to send after him to try to thinking he's gonna if you make him go fast early or get your head in front of him, he's gonna fold up on you and put him away. Well, he just runs you right into the ground. His replays are very, very impressive.
Yeah, we'll get Broberg in here, and kind of looking forward to it. And speaking of races to look forward to, you got the string at Remington. You got horses going at Fairgrounds and at Delta. What's coming up here the next couple of days that looks live? I'm just looking over. You do run today at Delta, and in fact, you do have there's stakes. You're not in the stakes, are you, in the next couple of days?
No. To be honest, this is kind of a slow time of year for us. We're trying to do as much buying and claiming as we can, and just gearing up for Oakland and a couple other places after the new year. Yeah, Sam Houston starts.
Yep.
I think January 6th or 8th. So. This is kind of a downtime for us, and kind of probably the least active time of year for us, the month of December, racing-wise. Like I said, it's kind of know, trying to buy horses out of different places privately and trying to claim as well, trying to fill some voids that feel we're missing for the up-and-coming Oaklawn meet.
Well, the Oaklawn season, we're starting to get excited. We talked on Friday with Rick Hammerly and, you know, between the purses and between the new construction and the hotel and the new building and everything else, there's going to be a kind of an important next step in the Oaklawn development. It's really an amazing story. And, Tino, I am delighted to get you back and to visit. And obviously keep me in mind. Everybody's going to have to keep him in mind on their Derby prep watch list. Continued success with him and the whole string. A real pleasure to get you on.
Okay, no, I appreciate it. Thank you very much, and you have a good day.
Robert Tino Diodoro, and keep me in mind. Wins the Kentucky Jockey Club and clearly is a horse that is going to benefit going forward. Breaks his maiden in the stake. And I do have to, you know what, I got to get, I didn't have the numbers. I wanted, I suppose, you know, the one issue when you have a horse that's on the Derby future. And, you know, I got to pull up the final number. I'm still without the computer, which has been just incredibly frustrating. So I don't have some of the things I normally would print, but I'll pull it up because I forgot to note, you know, obviously essential quality. I mean, the all others, I'm sure, went favored. But I'll get, I know that Darren Rogers sent out the recap, so I'll pull that recap up. And in fact, there it is, right there. Now, that was not what I'm looking for, Darren. The exciting release of the Derby artwork. Not a priority. Here we go. here we go. All others. Yes, we're taking a break, Dej. But as we take the break, I did want to get this number. Come on. Here we go. 19 to 1. That's not a bad number on a horse that you got to figure is going to like the distances as they get longer. There you go. Take a break. Rich Migliori is joining us next. Stay with us.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
The exciting Southern California Thoroughbred Daytime Racing Circuit returns to Los Alamitos Racecourse with opening day of the LA County Fair meet set for Friday, December 4th. The meet will feature five exciting stakes races, headed by the Starlet on Saturday, December 5th, and the Los Alamitos Futurity on Saturday, December 19th. Recent winners of the Los Alamitos Futurity include the outstanding multiple stakes winners Improbable and Thousand Words. On weekdays, our first post will be at 1 p.m., while weekends will feature a 12:30 p.m. first post time. Plus, our wagering menu includes a pair of $1 pick fours, a traditional $2 pick six, and the popular 14% players pick five. Watch and wager on all of the great racing action on TVG, plus all other major ADW providers and at open satellite locations. And as we continue to follow our local guidelines, we'd like to thank all the great racing fans across the nation for their continued support of the Los Alamitos Racecourse. Opening day, Friday, December 4th.